Thank you for coming with us today, coming on today, Ralph, and talking to us. Please explain a little bit about how the Lovell Telescope here at Jodrell Bank is part of this wider network.
The idea is that we're using a technique called interferometry, where you need to connect together several telescopes separated by large distances in order to study the fine detail within the radio sources in the sky. The Lovell Telescope, being a nice large telescope, has got lots of sensitivity and is a very useful addition to this network of telescopes that we set up around the world. Now, in order to connect them, obviously you've got to somehow bring all these signals from each telescope back together somewhere. And we do that within our own little array called Merlin here at Jodrell by sending the signals along microwave links. Shortly they'll be replaced by optical fibers. But when you've got distances which travel the Earth, of course it's impractical to send radio signals all the way across, particularly at the higher bandwidths and higher rate of data usage that we need. However, so what we used to do is certainly is record the data onto magnetic tapes and then more recently magnetic discs. But what we're developing now is to use the internet. The internet, of course, uses optical fibers buried in the ground or in submarine cables going all the way around the world. And there is a small amount of unused capacity on these fibers. The rest of it, of course, used for telephone calls, TV programs, and general communications. But we need very high data rates, something like, I would guess, around 100 times to 1,000 times the sort of levels you're getting in broadband.
So right, so this is like broadband to your home. We need 1,000 times that amount of data transfer for this sort of work, linking these telescopes.
So that means rather specialized techniques. So we've been developing for the last 4 years ways of doing that, ways of using the internet, driving up this tremendous data rates. We're going up to almost 1 gigabit per second, 900 megabits per second.
That's remarkable. So the main achievement has been linking the data coming from all these separate telescopes through the internet, rather than recording all the data at each individual telescope site onto magnetic tape and then physically shipping it across to some place.
That's right. It saves all the hassle of shipping tapes. It means you get the results in real time as they happen, so we can respond very much quicker than we were able to before to transient events in the sky. Something goes bang, supernova goes off, we're able to quickly swing the telescopes onto it and get the results within hours rather than having to wait for days or weeks like we used to before.
Let's go back a step and let's just discuss why we should bother doing this. I mean, the Lovell telescope is what? How big is it? 250 feet across or something?
Yeah, 250 feet, 76 meters.
Surely that's big enough. But we do know that bigger is better. We know that bigger is better. That's why we buy, you know, bigger and faster computers. We buy bigger and faster cars in some cases.
Right.
Why should we want to have a bigger telescope? Surely 250 feet is enough.
Well, the problem here, we're limited by physics. It's by diffraction in optics. The telescope itself has a beam or a response which is quite broad compared with the size of the individual objects we want to look at. Typical frequencies working at, for instance, it's 10 minutes of arc or half a degree sometimes. And that is enormous. We're talking about objects which are thousands of times smaller than that. We're studying objects which are fractions of an arc second, in fact down to a thousandth of an arc second in size.
So they appear very, very small in
the sky,
basically.
Very small.
And using, so what you're saying is that the telescope, even this massive telescope at Jodrell Bank, still can't see these tiny, small objects.
It can detect them, but it can't resolve their structures and see what things they are.
So it can't see their shape exactly.
No.
It'll just be a blur.
It'll just say there's something there. That's all you can get out of it. You can't say what its shape is, how its brightness varies with the wavelength or whatever, and all the physical parameters you just can't tell from just a single telescope like that. And that's why we need these big interferometer arrays in order to find the detail of the structure.
So essentially interferometry works. This fancy word interferometry means you've got more than one telescope observing the same thing at the same time, and you combine the signals together.
Yeah.
Okay, so why should that help? Why should it help that you have two telescopes separated by a certain distance? Surely if one telescope can only just detect a blur, then two telescopes won't necessarily be that much better.
It's all because you get this interference pattern between the two telescopes. It's a bit like Young slits, any of you that's done that at school or seen it, where the fringe pattern on the screen depends on the spacing of the two slits. And here it's the same sort of thing, that the spacing of the slits, if you like, is the spacing of the two telescopes. and so the width of the pattern on the screen depends on the spacing. So the resolution that you get depends directly as the distance apart of the two telescopes. So the bigger the distance, the smaller the angular resolution of the telescope.
Does that mean that two telescopes separated by a certain distance performs like a telescope of that distance?
To some extent, yes, it does. In terms of resolution, yes, that's right. In terms of sensitivity, of course, it's not, because you've only got these two small, relatively small dishes compared with the baseline between them. To get the same sort of resolution, for instance, in radio wavelengths that one has with the Hubble Space Telescope, then you need something like 200-kilometre baselines. And this is, in other words, distance between the telescopes of 200 kilometres. And this is exactly what Merlin is. It has telescopes up to that spacing.
So Merlin's an acronym. What does it stand for?
Multi-element radio-linked interferometer. Quite a mouthful.
Super, Merlin. We'll stick with Merlin, I think.
Yeah.
So Merlin has is an array of telescopes. Where are these telescopes? Where are they?
Well, Merlin telescopes are dotted around. There's a few relatively close to Jodrell Bank. There's some out around in Cheshire. Going further afield, there's one down in Knockin in Shropshire. There's one down south of Birmingham, but Defford in Worcestershire. And the furthest away is one near Cambridge. So the furthest away one, of course, is the one with 200-kilometre baseline.
Right. And so with this array, with the furthest distant radio telescope to Jodrell Bank, or the furthest separated telescope in this array, it gives us, effectively, a radio telescope which is 200 kilometres
in diameter.
Yes. In terms of looking at very small objects, in terms of their resolution.
Yes, that's right.
That's fantastic. So gives us
So when we go to VLBI, of course, now we're talking about thousands of kilometres across, because the telescopes are all the way around the world.
Explain what VLBI is then.
Well, VLBI stands for very long baseline interferometry, as opposed to short baseline interferometry. And here the telescopes are those situated in all sorts of countries in the world. There is a European network, we call it EVN, European VLBI Network, which actually includes two telescopes in China. You never thought China was in Europe, but it is, as far as scientists are concerned. And so we have 2,000 or 3,000 kilometre baselines going from ones here in Jodrell Bank in the UK all the way across to the ones in China, that one in Shanghai. And these telescopes join together regularly about three, four times a year for sessions of about 3 or 4 weeks long, where there's an agreed program of observations they make, and they look at looking simultaneously at the same objects in the sky at the same time, at the same frequency, the same polarization.
You have telescopes in Europe looking at the same thing as a telescope in China at the same time, and you're able to
organize it so that they can do that. Mind you, it's taken a few years to get that to work. We've had all these things that go wrong before in the past, but anyway, they work now, so that's very good.
So in that sense, you've got a telescope essentially the size of the Earth from Europe to China.
The Japanese launched a satellite called Halka, which had a small telescope on it, and that joined in with telescopes again around the world doing the same thing. So in fact, we got bigger than the Earth. We went to about three times the Earth diameter in terms of size.
That's remarkable. And what size things can a telescope that size, including the Japanese satellite, how small can you see with?
Well, these are mostly quasars. These are the centres of active galaxies, which are very bright in optical and radio. They are objects which eject blobs of matter at apparent superluminal speeds, apparently faster than light, but in fact their actual velocity is perhaps 90 to 99% of the speed of light.
Still remarkable.
And because of Doppler boosting effects and various things, these appear to be very bright, and you can see the effects of the blobs being moving out. So there's a number of monitoring observations are being made. These are things we call jets. They have a jet-like structure. In other words, it's like a spray of material coming out from a central black hole in a reasonably well collimated jet, like a jet of water. These blobs move out very fast, as we said, and interact with the surrounding medium. And the big question is, well, what generates these jets? And it's all to do with mechanisms around the black hole in the centre of the object. In fact, the presence of jets is a very good indicator that there's a black hole in the centre.
So you're actually discovering the physics going on around black holes.
It's the physics around black holes that we're investigating by doing this. So it's all to do with strange magnetic field and general relativity effects.
Spectacular stuff.
Read the Kip Thorne's book on the membrane paradigm, you'll see what that's about.
Let's talk about the latest technological improvement that you've managed. You mentioned it earlier on, the fact that you now no longer rely on recording all the data on site, all these separate telescopes around the world, recording all the data that they receive
yeah.
onto magnetic tape, and then they all get sent to one particular place for them to be combined so that you can do this analysis whereby all the data are combined and you now have an effectively bigger telescope. Now the improvement, you say, is it's all done electronically, online, basically.
Well, we're getting there. At the moment, only six telescopes can do that in Western Europe. Well, in fact, includes one in Tehran in Poland. But
so which telescopes are the ones which are currently connected?
Current ones are two at in the UK. That's the Cambridge Telescope and the local ones here. One of the local ones here. And then there's one in Westerbork in northern Holland, in the Netherlands. There's one in Onsala in Sweden. There's one in Tehran in Poland. And there's one in near Bologna in Italy.
Right.
The biggest telescope in Europe that's generally used for these things is the Effelsberg 100 meter near Bonn, but they are not connected yet.
So presumably over time you yeah. want to connect more and more of these telescopes.
We're gradually connecting them in. There is a program to an EU-funded program to try and do that, to connect rather more telescopes into this system. So maybe in 5 or 10 years' time, then we will see all of them, telescopes worldwide.
Do you use existing internet links, or do you actually have to put new ones in?
No, they're existing links. The ones for our own array for Merlin are our own links. We have them put in. But the international links, of course, it's prohibitively expensive to lay. We're talking about £1 million a mile.
Sure.
Sort of costs of laying a submarine cable. So we obviously make use of what's there already. And the academic networks around the globe, there's particularly in Europe, we have one called Super Janet in the UK, which is run on behalf of the research councils by an organisation calling themselves UKERNA. Mm-hmm. And they connect the universities within the UK to various places, so we can connect from us right down to London and then to Amsterdam. And then there's a network called Cheyenne in Europe, which is again an academic network. It connects together all the individual national academic networks. And this is high bandwidth. We're talking about 10 gigabit per second links that go all throughout Europe and everywhere. So we're making use of that. Of course, there's loads of other users. All the rest of the country's research and universities also use these links.